interactions, the standard model. Then, of course, we know they come from Yukawa interactions because that's the only gauge invariant way we can generate masses. We can't write down bare mass terms. And I argued on Friday that these are the only renormalizable gauge invariant operators you can involve to generate a mass term involving the left-handed and right-handed fermion fields and the Higgs. Okay. So here's what we have starting out. And then what we did is we just plugged in the value of the Higgs field that you get by expressing everything in unitary gauge. So in unitary gauge, we basically just forget about everything, all the degrees of freedom except for the physical Higgs fields. And then the other degrees of freedom are what get eaten by the W and the Z. All right. So here's the Higgs field in unitary gauge, and I'm just going to plug in and remind you what we get. So we get minus y uij times v over the square root of 2. You write I u left j minus u dij v, oops, keep forgetting this part. 1 plus h over v minus y d ij d bar right I d left j times 1 plus h over v. And then we have y e ij e right I e left j 1 plus h over v. And then I forgot this should be v over square root of 2. And there's a v over square root of 2. OK, so here's what we get. and I also mentioned last class, in general, there's no principle that says the Yukawa interactions have to be diagonal in generation space or in flavor space. They can have an arbitrary coupling, which can involve different generations, like this. Right? So when we just write the terms like this, there's no guarantee that the masses that we generate by the Higgs will be diagonal. And in general, they're not. So what we want to do is diagonalize the mass terms using a biunitary transformation. And we proved last class that you can diagonalize any complex square matrix using a biunitary transformation. So I won't go through that again. So let's define a mass matrix. So the mass matrix will just be this capital Y times V over the square root of 2. So I'll just rewrite this again. We have M U I J U bar right I U left J 1 plus H over V. And then let me just do dot, dot, dot for the other terms. It's similar. And then we'll have plus Hermitian conjugate. All right. So let's diagonalize this term using a biunitary transformation. So let me rewrite this first. Instead of multiplying all the components out, I'll rewrite it in vector notation in the straightforward way. It'll be minus, I'll have u bar right times a matrix mu. And then u left times 1 plus h over v plus dot, dot, dot plus Hermitian conjugate. OK. And then I hope it's clear, u left and right are just now three component objects in generations. So it would just be u left, right, 1, u left, right, 2, u left, right, 3. And what I just mean by that is we have the u quark left and right, the C quark left and right, and the T quark left and right. So it's just a vector in generation space. And then this is just the 3x3 matrix where these are the components. So now we want to diagonalize this matrix M U using a biunitary transformation. So what that means is that we can write down a unitary matrix U, and then it'll have a subscript UR, dagger, times MU, and then another unitary matrix U with a subscript UL. This can diagonalize the mass matrix M. And so I'll just write that as little m superscript U, which is just the diagonal entries. The diagonal matrix, where the entries are MU1, M2U, MU2, MU3. And these are, of course, the eigenvalues of the mass matrix, which are just the masses of the fermions. And so that you could also write as MU, MC, MT, 0, 0. So these are the actual masses of the quarks. All right. This is using biunitary transformation. All right. And then U subscript U left, U right are unitary matrices. They're not the same unitary matrix. All right. So here's how to diagonalize the mass matrix. Now we want to define new fermion fields, which are related to the old ones, but rotated by this matrix. So we'll define new fermion fields. Which we'll just indicate by a prime. So we'll have U left prime and U right prime, which are defined by the old fields, U left and U right, are equal to the new fields rotated by this matrix, U, U left, U right, like this. So this is how you define the new fields. Or you could invert this and say that the new fields U left, U right prime will be equal to this unitary matrix, U left, right, dagger, acting on the old fields. It doesn't matter. It's equivalent, of course, since U is unitary. All right. So now that we have these new fields, we can express the Lagrangian in terms of the primed fields. And again, let's just consider the first term for now. So let's just consider this term, U right, MU, U left. So now I'm just going to use this definition here. So I get U bar right prime. And then I'll have a U, U right dagger. Then I'll have the mass matrix. And then I'll have a U, U left, and then a U left prime. So now you see why I define the fields in this way, because now we have exactly the combination of unitary matrix right, mass matrix, and unitary matrix left to diagonalize this matrix M. So we have U right prime. Now we have the diagonal matrix little mu and U left prime. So we've diagonalized it. This is just equal to mu times U right prime U left prime plus MC times C right prime C left prime plus MT T prime T right prime bar T left prime. All right. We can make the same field redefinitions for the down type quark fields, for the lepton fields. It works exactly the same way. So we'll define D left and right prime as the original fields will be equal to a unitary matrix, U D sub d left or d right, acting on d left and d right prime, where the d prime will be our new field. And then we'll have e left and e right will be e, the unitary matrix e left or right, acting on the new field, e left, e right prime. Okay. Now, what about the neutrino fields? Well, there's no mass term for the neutrinos in the standard model. They're assumed to be massless. It's not true, but it's just part of the standard model. So since the neutrinos are massless, we're free to rotate neutrinos in flavor space or generation space by any matrix we want. Doesn't matter. So let's define the neutrino fields as rotated by the same matrix that we use to rotate the charged lepton fields. And you'll see why we do that in a second. So since there are no neutrino masses in the standard model, we're free to rotate the neutrino fields, nu left I, by any matrix. So let's use the same matrix that we did for rotating the left-handed leptons. So we'll define nu left prime by nu left is equal to u e left nu left prime. So we're just using the same unitary matrix to rotate the neutrino fields as we did for the left-handed charged leptons. That's all we're doing. And we're free to do that. OK. So we've rotated all of the fields. Now, if we express the Lagrangian in terms of the primed fields, everything is diagonal now. So in terms of the primed fields, all terms in the Yukawa interaction are diagonal. So here's what we get. So we have minus u bar right prime times this matrix mu, which is diagonal, u left prime, 1 plus h over v. Then we have minus d right prime, md, d left prime, 1 plus h over v, minus e right prime, me, e left prime, 1 plus h over v, plus Hermitian conjugate. OK. Now, all of these interactions are real. What I mean by that is the masses are real, because you're free to choose, using the biunitary transformation, you're free to make all of the masses real. And so when I add together the Hermitian conjugate, it's just going to add together the same terms, just with the left and right swapped. And so I can pair them up, the chirality components, in terms of just psi bar psi. So this is equal to minus u bar mu u prime 1 plus h over v minus d bar md d prime 1 plus h over v minus e bar me e prime 1 plus h over v. So everything has a very simple form, which is minus sum over all fermions psi, the mass of the fermion times psi bar psi, and then 1 plus h over v, where psi is equal to u c
T ds b e mu tau. So all of the quarks and the charged leptons. And I should call them primes. But now that we've diagonalized and gone to the basis where the masses are diagonal, we can just remove the primes. These are the physical mass eigenstate fields. And so these will be the fields that we'll deal with from now on. So let's just say we'll remove the primes. All right.
Sorry, I think I missed it. How did you get rid of the LNR subscripts? Like the Hermitian conjugate?
Yeah. So here, the Hermitian conjugate gives you exactly the same terms as here, just with L and R swapped.
Yeah.
And so what you get are terms that are like psi right, psi left, times, you know, m psi 1 plus h over v plus m psi psi bar left, psi right, 1 plus h over v. So I can just, when I add together this plus this, it just gives you psi bar psi. It's like the same as the usual mass term. So this is just m psi, psi bar psi, 1 plus h over v. Okay. Right. So the other thing which is important to notice is that once we've diagonalized and gone to the mass eigenstate basis in the fields, the interactions of the Higgs boson with the fermion fields is also diagonal. So the Higgs boson interactions don't mix different types of fermions. It's always diagonal. So since we've redefined the fermion fields, we want to check what happens to the other interactions. And specifically, the ones we need to worry about are the charged and neutral current interactions. So let's just consider one example. Well, let me write down the neutral current interaction first. So just to remind you, the neutral current interaction, so this is the interaction of a fermion with the photon or the Z, is minus E Q psi. So this is the electric charge of psi in units of E. And then we have psi bar A slash psi. So this is just the normal QED term for a fermion psi. Then we have minus g over cosine theta w psi bar z slash. And then we have t3 left, p left minus q psi sine squared theta w square, sine squared theta w times psi. OK, so these were the neutral current interactions that we wrote down before. Remember, t3 is just plus or minus 1 half, depending on whether psi is the upper or lower components. And then theta w is just the weak mixing angle. OK. So let's just do an example. Let's just take, for example, the up-type quarks. So we'll just consider psi is equal to u I, for example, for an example. So let's write down the neutral current Lagrangian. We have minus E. We have the charge of U, which is just 2/3, but I'll just keep it as QU. Then what I want to do is decompose psi in terms of the left and right-handed components, because they rotate differently, of course, under the transformation when we redefine the fields. So first, I'll decompose this term. And it would go like psi bar left I, a slash psi bar left I, or psi, oh, sorry, u bar left I, a slash u left I, plus u bar right I, a slash u right I. So that's the photon interaction. And then for the z interaction, I have g over cosine theta w, and then I'll have u bar left I, z slash. And so for the left-handed part, I'll have to keep the t3, which will just be a 1 half. But I'll just keep it as t3. So it's t3 left. And then I have a minus q u sine squared theta w. And then I have a u left I. Now, for the right-handed component, I have a u left, sorry, u right I, z slash. And then the only part that contributes to the right-handed component coupling to the z is this one. So I have a minus q u sine squared theta w u right I, and in parentheses. And just for clarity, I'll just say that t3 left would be 1 half for this case. And QU is 2/3. All right. So now these are the unprimed fields. And now what we want to do is just transform to the primed fields. So everything has the same similar form. We have expressions of the type of u bar left I, gamma mu, u bar left I. And when we transform to the primed fields, this will be u bar left I prime times u left dagger, gamma mu, u left, u left I prime. And of course, the unitary matrices acting on generations will commute with the gamma mu, which is just acting on the Dirac indices. So you can just commute this through, and you'll just get u dagger u, which will just give you 1. So it's invariant under this transformation. So it doesn't depend on which basis you're using in. And it's invariant once you rotate to the mass eigenstate basis. So it's invariant under the field rotation. To the mass eigenstate basis. And you probably noticed that the right-handed terms also have exactly the same form. It's always u bar right, gamma mu, u right. And again, when you rotate to the mass eigenstate basis, it'll again be invariant. So the neutral current interactions will always be invariant under this redefinition. And so if they're diagonal in the original basis, they will still be diagonal in the new basis. So neutral current interactions. Are diagonal in the mass eigenstate basis. So this tells you that the Z and the photon don't change flavors or generations, or they preserve flavor. Okay. So now let's do the charge current interaction. So write down the charge current interaction. I have minus G over the square root of 2, U bar left I, W slash plus, then I have D left I, plus nu left bar I, W slash plus, E left I, and then I have plus Hermitian conjugate. Okay, so now let's go to the mass eigenstate basis by doing the same rotation in flavor space. We have minus G over the square root of 2. Then we'll have a U left I prime, and then we'll have a, oh, I need a different index here, so let me call it J. Then I'll have a U dagger, U left, and then the indices will be J and I. I'll have a W plus slash. Okay. So that was rotating the U fields. Now I have to rotate the D fields, and that matrix is U D left, and then I'll have the indices I K, D left prime K. All right. And now I can do the same thing for the lepton fields. So I'll have nu left J prime. And if you remember, I rotated the neutrino using the left-handed electron field. So I'll put in a U dagger, E left JI. Then I have a W slash plus. And then I'm rotating the electron field. So that's a U E left. And the indices are IK. Then I have an E left K prime, and then I have plus Hermitian conjugate. Okay. So now you see why I wanted to rotate the neutrino using the left-handed electron field. It's because here I just get UE left dagger times UE left, and so that will give you the identity. And so again, I won't have any flavor-changing interactions of the W with the leptons. But for the quarks, it's not so simple, right? Because there's no reason that this unitary matrix is the inverse of this unitary matrix. And in general, they're not. So let's define a matrix V, which is U left dagger times U D left. So these are two unitary matrices, so the product of that will also be unitary. And let me just expand out this matrix in components. So it'll have components where all of the matrix elements are labeled by which quarks they're interacting with. And so I can write it as VUD, VUS, VUB, VCD, VCS, VCB, VTD, VTS, VTB. All right, so these are just all the nine matrix elements of this unitary matrix. This is called the CKM matrix, or the Kibibo-Maskawa Kobayashi. CKM matrix. And so in terms of the CKM matrix, here's what we get for this interaction. We have the charge current interaction is minus G over the square root of 2. We have U left I prime times V I J. W slash plus D left J prime. And then we have the leptons, which is still diagonal. So it's just nu left I prime W slash plus
E left I prime plus summation conjugate. Okay.
So this is the important result from considering the effect of these flavor rotations that we need by diagonalizing the mass matrix. We get this extra unitary matrix that appears only in the quark charge current interactions, which mixes the different flavors. Or I should say couples different flavors to one another. So the charge current interaction is the only interaction that couples quarks of different generations. So here's the, let's just write down what the Feynman rule would be. So I'd have a W plus coming in, and then I would have a U of generation I going out, and a D of generation J going in. And the Feynman rule would just be minus IG over the square root of 2. I have a VIJ, since I'm coupling generation J to generation I here. And then I have a gamma mu, and then I would just have a P left. So that would be the Feynman rule for the W interaction with quarks. And then you can write down the same thing with leptons. It's a lot simpler. W plus mu coming in. I would have a neutrino going out, generation I, and an electron of generation J going in. And this Feynman rule would be minus IG over the square root of 2. And there's a gamma mu, P left. But it has to couple together the charged lepton and the neutrino of the same flavor, or the same generation. And so it has to be proportional to delta IJ. So there's no mixing for the lepton interactions. OK. Now we're going to talk about effective field theory. For the weak interaction. All right. So for weak processes, those involving the W and the Z, with energy E, which is much, much less than the mass of the W and the mass of the Z, we don't need to use the full standard model Lagrangian. I should say, with the W and the Z as degrees of freedom. So we can use an effective Lagrangian.
where the W and the Z are integrated out. And their interactions can be expressed as non-renormalizable operators. All right. So, yeah, maybe you've seen this before. I don't know. Probably you have. But let's just do it. So the example is muon decay. And so here's what we'll do. First, let's write down the matrix element that you would get by computing it in the standard model using the Feynman rules that we wrote down for the charge-current interactions, this one here. So what's the Feynman diagram? Well, it looks like this. So we have a muon, let's say with momentum p going in, and then it gets converted to a muon neutrino with momentum p prime by exchanging a w, and then which gets converted into an electron and an electron antineutrino. And let's say this one has momentum q, and this will have momentum q prime. All right. So let's write down the matrix element. So we have a matrix element for mu to nu mu e nu e bar. So we have a u e with momentum q, u e bar with momentum q. So now I'll just use the Feynman rules that we have up there at the top. We have a minus ig over the square root of 2, gamma mu, p left, and then a neutrino going, or an antineutrino going out. So we have a v nu e with q prime. Now we have the w propagator, which is minus I, let me call the w momentum k. So it'll be k squared minus m w squared. Then I have eta mu nu minus k mu k nu over m w squared. And then I have the fermions for the muon parts. So I have an outgoing muon antineutrino, u bar mu mu p prime. And then I have the vertex minus g over the square root of 2. Gamma nu, p left. And then I have a u for the muon, p. OK. Bless you. So here's the matrix element. The first thing I want to do is explain why we can just throw out this term from the matrix element. So it contributes only something that's very, very small. And so we don't really need it when considering the effective theory for the weak interaction for muon decay. So let's consider the k mu k nu term. And what we want to do is just use the Dirac equation, because I have k mu here, and that will get contracted into the gamma mu here. And similarly, the k nu will get contracted into the gamma nu here. And k is just equal to either p minus p prime or equal to q plus q prime. So let's do the electron term first. We'll have a u bar for the electron, k slash, p left, nu, nu e. All right. So this is just equal to u e
q slash plus q prime slash p left, and then v for the neutrino. All right, now we just use the Dirac equation. Q is the momentum of the electron. So this times ue bar, I forget, is it plus me or minus me? You guys remember? Plus? I think it's plus. You guys don't know. Oh well. But you probably would have done this more recently than me. OK, so let's say it's plus. This one, q prime, it'll anti-commute, or I should say, when it goes through the p left, it'll convert the p left into a p right. And then it'll act on this antineutrino to give 0, because the mass of the neutrino is 0. So we only really need to consider the q slash. So that'll give us me times ue p left v ue. All right. Now we'll have the other term, which is u bar nu mu k slash p left u for the muon. All right. So now, k slash is, if it's going that way, yeah, k slash is equal to p minus p prime. So I'll have a p slash here. It'll go through the p left and then act on this to give a mass of the muon. And so this will give us a mass of the muon times u for the neutrino times p right, and then times u for the muon. All right. So for the k mu, k nu terms, I'll just get terms that go like me times m mu, but then divided by mw squared. So these terms will be proportional to the k mu, k nu over mw squared terms. We'll go like me over mu over mw squared, which is a very small number, something like 10 to the minus 8. So those terms we can forget about. Yeah?
Where are the masses coming from? How are you getting that from? Oh, I see. Okay.
So it comes from the Dirac equation. So what I'm using is that u bar e q slash would be equal to u bar e times me. I think it's plus. Any other questions?
Yeah, sorry, what about PR? I don't understand this
one. Oh yeah, for this one?
Yeah.
Yeah, because I'm doing several steps at once. So we have a u nu mu. Let me put in the momentum, p prime. So k slash is p slash prime, or sorry, p slash. Sorry, p slash minus p prime slash. Then I have a p left, and then a u mu for p. All right. So this one with the Dirac equation will just give me 0, because the neutrino is massless. And so I'll just be left with the p slash. So I'll just be left with u bar nu mu p prime, p slash, p left, u mu p. So now we need to move this one over here so I can use the Dirac equation. P left is 1 minus gamma 5 over 2. But when p slash commutes through, I should say anti-commutes with gamma 5, it'll convert the minus gamma 5 to a plus gamma 5. And so we'll get p right. So this is u bar nu mu p prime p right p slash u mu of p. And so now I can use the Dirac equation to just set p slash equal to m mu, mass of the muon. And I'll just get m mu u bar nu mu p prime p right u of the muon times p, of p. OK. Is that more clear? Yeah. All right. So, so using the Dirac equation, we can show that we really don't care at all about this extra term here. We can just consider the eta mu nu term, and that's fine. So now let's write down the matrix element. I'm just going to expand everything out, and you'll see what you get. Here's what I get. So I times the matrix element. So I've got I cubed, which is minus I. And then I have three minus signs, which is another minus. So I have an I. I have a g squared. I'll have a 1 over, then divided by k squared minus mu squared. Is that right? Yeah, I guess so. P left is 1 minus gamma 5 over 2. And so I'm going to factor out those 1 halves explicitly, as well as square root of 2 and square root of 2 to give me a factor of 1 over 8. And then I'll have u for the electron gamma mu, 1 minus gamma 5, and then v for the electron neutrino. And then I'll have u bar for the muon neutrino, gamma mu, 1 minus gamma 5, and then u for the muon. So this is what I get. Now, we also want to make this approximation that the typical energies are much less than the mass of the W. So that means that k squared appearing in the denominator here is going to be much less than mw squared. So I can just drop this term. So I can just set that term to 0. And I'll get a minus I g squared over 8 mw squared. And then I get a u bar e gamma mu, 1 minus gamma 5 v nu e, u bar nu mu, gamma mu, 1 minus gamma 5 u mu. All right. So this is the matrix element that we can compute in this limit, that we're much below the mass, where energy is much below the mass of the W. Now I want to match this on to an effective interaction in the Lagrangian. All I'm asking is what type of interaction would I need in order to generate a matrix element of this type? And the interaction is as follows. So this matrix element can be generated by a dimension 6 operator in the Lagrangian. So I'm writing down a Lagrangian interaction. I'll call it L effective, since it's an effective interaction. It's not the full theory, but it's just an effective interaction, minus E bar gamma mu, 1 minus gamma 5, nu E, times nu mu bar gamma mu, 1 minus gamma 5 times mu. Let me change the mu's just so it doesn't get confusing. I'll call this alpha. So this interaction would generate exactly this matrix element if you compute the Feynman rule and compute the matrix element from starting from here. That's how you match the two things. The next thing you want to do is, well, I also need a coefficient of this operator. And I want to take that coefficient to be something that matches what I computed in the full theory. But there's a special way of parameterizing this coefficient, which is to write it as a constant G Fermi divided by the square root of 2. But these two things, of course, have to agree with one another. And so I should get G Fermi over square root of 2 should be exactly equal to g squared over 8 and w squared.
What's the definition of the dimension of an operator?
What'd you say?
What do you define to be the dimension of an operator? What do you mean by dimension 6 operator?
OK, sure. So what you want to do is just count the dimensions of the fields entering into that operator. I'll show you how it works once I erase this. All right. So what you want to do is count the mass dimension of a field. So you may know that the mass dimension of the fermion field, psi, is equal to 3 halves. Is that familiar? Yeah? The way that comes about is because we know that the action has to be dimensionless. So the action S is dimensionless. And since the action is equal to d for x times the Lagrangian, it tells you that the Lagrangian has mass dimension 4. Since x has mass dimension minus 1, so d for x has mass dimension minus 4. So if I combine minus 4 and 4, I'll get 0. So you got something that's dimensionless. So now you would want to look at the Dirac Lagrangian, so just the free part. Psi bar d slash psi. Since this is a derivative, it has dimensions of 1 over x, which has mass dimensions 1. So that means that psi and psi bar combined have to have mass dimension 3. And so psi has to have mass dimensions 3 halves in order to get Lagrangian that's dimension 4. OK, now I can look at this effective interaction. It just has 4 fermion fields. And so the mass dimension will just be 3 halves times 4. Which is 6.
So when you say dimension, you always mean mass dimension?
Yeah, mass dimension. So in order to get something that's dimension 4 in the Lagrangian, the coefficient of the mass of the operator has to have mass dimension minus 2, right? OK, so now we want to match the effective interaction to the matrix element. So we want to match the effective interaction to the matrix element M. And you get G Fermi over the square root of 2 is equal to G squared over 8 MW squared. So G Fermi is called Fermi's constant. And OK, it has mass dimension minus 2. All right. So now, we can write down the full charge current effective interaction. Oops. So charge current interactions. Can be described by a 4 fermion effective theory. And this is called Fermi theory. So we wrote down the 4 fermion effective interaction between muon-type fermions, or muon-type leptons, and electron-type leptons. But you can imagine doing exactly the same exercise, connecting all possible fermions that can interact with W. That's 4 Fermi theory. So here's what we get. So the effective interactions for the charge current processes would be minus G Fermi over the square root of 2. And then we can sum over the different flavors, I and j. So we have E bar I gamma mu 1 minus gamma 5 nu I times nu j bar gamma mu 1 minus gamma 5 E j plus Hermitian conjugate. These are called leptonic four fermion interactions because they only involve leptons. Now we can do the same thing where we couple leptons and quarks. We have to sum over I and J and K. We'll have a CKM matrix element, Vij. We'll have a U bar I, gamma mu, 1 minus gamma 5, and then Dj. And then we'll have an E bar K, gamma mu, 1 minus gamma 5, nu K, plus Hermitian conjugate. These are called semi-leptonic processes, semi-leptonic interactions. They involve just one leptonic current coupled to, or over here, coupled to the quark current. And then we have processes involving only quarks. Sum over I, J, K, and L. We'll have V, I, J, V, K, L, star, U bar I, gamma mu, 1 minus gamma 5, dj, d bar l, gamma mu, 1 minus gamma 5, uk, plus Hermitian conjugate. And these are called hadronic charge-current interactions. All right. So here's what we get for four Fermi theory. One of the things that comes out, or I should say there are two important things that come out when you consider four Fermi theory in the context of the standard model. The first thing that you'll notice is that they all have exactly the same coefficient in front, G Fermi, right? Some of them have the, you know, processes involving quarks have the additional factors of the CKM matrix elements, but modulo that, everything is proportional to the same overall coefficient, G Fermi. So it tells you that the weak interaction is has this universality to it, and that comes from the fact that it descends from a gauge interaction. The other thing that comes out is that everything is, has this exactly the same Dirac structure, gamma mu, 1 minus gamma 5, and then gamma mu, 1 minus gamma 5. So again, that comes from the gauge interaction, which only couples to left-handed, where the SE2 part only couples to left-handed fermions.
Why the same coefficient apply the
So if you just started from a bottom-up approach and saying that, well, let me just try to construct this theory in general, there's no reason why each of these different interactions should have the same coefficient in front. There's no principle that tells you that it does. But the fact that it comes from a gauge interaction tells you that it would, just because the coupling, the gauge coupling is the same, independent of whether it's a lepton or a Fermi, of a, sorry, independent of it's a lepton or a quark. All right, so so I should say these interactions all have a universal coupling. G Fermi, and a universal Dirac structure. Which is gamma mu, 1 minus gamma 5, cross gamma mu, 1 minus gamma 5. This structure is known as V minus A, where the V is vector and the A is axial vector. So this is called V minus A, or cross V minus A, since it has the structure of vector minus axial vector. OK. You can also write down a four Fermi theory for the neutral current interactions by integrating out the Z boson. So that can be done, but I won't write that down. Oh, I'm out of time. Let me just do one more thing real quick. Then I'll be finished. So let's just evaluate what G Fermi is. So G Fermi over the square root of 2 is G squared over 8 mw squared. And if I just expand what mw is, I get that this is G squared over 2 times G squared times the vev squared, where I've used the fact that mw is just equal to 1 half G times the vev. So the G's cancel. And this is just 1 over 2 times the vev squared. So I can solve for the Higgs vev. It's just equal to the square root of times g, square root of 2 times g Fermi, and then all to the minus 1 half power. So if I measure this coupling g Fermi by, you know, in muon decay, then I know what the Higgs vev has to be. It's totally fixed. And if you just plug in a number for what g Fermi is, this number ends up being around 246 GeV. Since we know from muon decay that G Fermi is around something like 1.166, I think, times 10 to the minus 5 GeV to the minus 2. So the Higgs vev is known by measuring the weak interaction. So let me just draw this here so you know it's important. And I just want to mention one other thing, which is that there is an alternate convention for the vev, how you define V, which I'll just mention this. So there's an alternate convention that sometimes people use where they set h to be 0 and then v plus h over the square root of 2. We defined it as v plus h all over the square root of 2, but some people define it like this. And in this convention, v is around 174 GeV. But they're just related by a factor of square root of 2. So that's all, just so you don't get confused. But once you express V in terms of G Fermi, there's no more ambiguity about convention. So sometimes people do that. They eliminate V from their expressions instead of G, and put it in terms of G Fermi. OK, that's all.